Hello to my I'm All Over the Place listeners. I have a couple of footnotes for you before we begin this episode. First of all, there is a slight name change to the podcast. You may or may not have noticed, but I am removing the first word from the title of the podcast. I'm no longer calling it I'm All Over the Place. I'm calling it All Over the Place, primarily because the focus of the podcast has changed really since I first introduced it. If you were listening to a lot of those earlier episodes, it really was more of a personal journal. It was social commentary. I was commenting on a lot of current events, kind of in the way I do now, but the podcast has taken on much more of a socially conscious focus. It's taken on much more of a political focus, a cultural focus, and it's much less focused on me and my personal journey, I would say. I used to do a feature at the end of the podcast called Finding Your Voice, and it was all about learning who you were artistically and that kind of thing. I had a very different vision for what the podcast was going to be going into it, but I was not married to it. So I've kind of allowed it to evolve over time. And then, of course, now being paired with KJLH, I'm able to bring you more consistent content that is a little harder hitting. It's addressing social issues, political issues, societal topics, things that I do deeply care about, but it is not as personal as it used to be. So for that reason, I feel like a name change is in order, just a slight tweak to the name of the podcast. So All Over the Place versus I'm All Over the Place, not a major change, but still, I think a little more descriptive of what the podcast has really evolved into. Now, secondly, this is going to be one of those weeks where there is not a visual element to the podcast. If you're someone who watches the podcast on YouTube, and if you all did not know, there is a visual version of the podcast. It's just me sitting in my office. But this is going to be one of those weeks that we don't have a visual element to the podcast. And really, just because my schedule has been so insane lately, this was really a time-saving tool on my part this week. I don't know that I'll be doing this very much going forward, but this week, it really did help me just to focus on the audio version. I hope those of you who watch on YouTube are not too disappointed this week that there is not a video element to the podcast. But the good news is that both of the breakdowns that were contained in last week's episode on medical racism, they have both been posted. So you have full-on, visually focused breakdowns on both the maternal mortality rate and on the racist kidney disease analysis. So you heard both of those pieces last week. I did a really rough cut of those and just threw them in the podcast. But now you can see the fully fleshed out breakdown on both of those topics. This week, we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants. No breakdown within a breakdown. Like I said, it was more of a time-saving thing, but I had a subject that I really wanted to talk about this week. And I'm going to let the breakdown version of Dara, the KJLH version of Dara, tell you all about it. I don't want to introduce it to you twice. So I'm going to send you on over to Breakdown Land now. Remember to rate and review the podcast. I really appreciate you all doing whatever you can to help get the word out about the newly titled All Over the Place podcast. And just a little programming note, I have a series of interviews that I'm going to be doing in the month of May. I'm going to have some very special guests that are going to come in and we are going to talk about some of these hard-hitting subjects. I'm really looking forward to presenting these conversations to you. So that's what May is going to be. But here's this week's episode. I hope you enjoy this one. It's a little bit different. Let me know what you think. We'll see you next time. Well, hi there, folks. I'm Dara Starr Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm glad to be back with you to talk about the issues that matter. If you follow the show, you know what's coming up. I'm going to tell you exactly where you can find me. The best place to connect with me is on the KJLH Instagram page at Radio Free KJLH, or you can stop by my personal Instagram page and you can find me there at Dara Tucker B. And everywhere else online, including TikTok, including YouTube, I still do Facebook. Everywhere else, you can find me at Dara Starr Tucker. That's Dara with one R and Star with two. Now, as I let you know last week, I'm planning on joining you for the KJLH Women's Conference in May. We're still solidifying the details of exactly the shape that that's going to take, but I'm looking forward to meeting listeners of The Breakdown in person. Visit the KJLH website at kjlhradio.com to register for the Women's Health Expo. It's totally free and it happens on the 11th of May. I'm looking forward to being there with you, so get to registering. Now, what do I have in store for you today? Well, today is going to be a little bit of a different episode. I think this is more of a meditation, I think, on our collective history as it relates to the kind of people that we uplift in the Black community. And I'm going to title this episode, Do I Have to Root for Everybody Black? Do I have to root for everybody Black? If you all know who Issa Rae is, and I think most of you probably do, then you know she was asked on the red carpet a while back. She was asked who she was rooting for at an awards ceremony, and this is what she had to say.
Last but not least, who are you rooting for tonight?
I'm rooting for everybody Black. I am. Betting on Black tonight.
So that's Issa Rae, the director, the actress, groundbreaking actress, loved her internet series, which then led to an HBO series, Insecure. Issa Rae is a shining light, and I think it was a very bold and courageous statement for her to respond to that question in that way. That is a radical statement of support for the Black community, and I admire her for saying it. But it has given me pause, I'll have to say. Many, many times since then. And I have had to question whether or not I would ever make a statement like that. Am I rooting for everybody Black? And I don't know if I know how to answer it, to be honest. The death of O.J. Simpson here very recently has brought up a lot for me in this area, and I'm sure it has for a lot of other people, which is why I want to talk about this idea of standing 10 toes down for anybody Black. Do we owe our unquestioning support to everybody Black? And this is not even to say that that's what Issa Rae meant by that statement. I don't think it actually was what she meant when she said, I'm rooting for everybody Black at this specific award show. But I think the statement itself can serve as a bit of a prompt for further interrogation around that subject. What does it mean to root for everybody Black? And is that something that we should require of ourselves? Now, we all know who O.J. Simpson is, all right? We all have our own history with watching his ascent. Really, when I was coming up, probably more so early 90s, by that point, O.J. Simpson had become a movie star. I loved the Naked Gun movies. And to be honest, that was really more so what I knew him from. I didn't really know much about his football career. For my dad, he was a football star. I knew that he was a Hall of Famer. I believe he's a Heisman Trophy winner. And then he went on to do these Hertz commercials where he's running through the airport. Super iconic commercials for people who remember them. But when I came along, it was all about the Naked Gun. And here was this charismatic, handsome guy. He reminded me of my uncles. He reminded me of my father. He reminded me of my cousins. This was somebody that I wanted to root for. And I know I was not alone in that. OJ was the type of person that you just wanted to root for. He was an all-American athlete. He had everything going for him, which is why it was such a fall from grace when everything blew up the way it did in the mid-90s. His ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, ends up murdered along with a friend of hers, Ronald Goldman, and OJ ends up being the number one suspect. He ends up being charged with those murders. And I have to tell you, I was in college at the time, and I was absolutely glued to that television. I was late to class half the time. I was skipping some classes just to be able to watch that trial. It was really one of the first big trials that was broadcast on 24-hour news. We watched it on CNN. It's one of the things that made CNN so relevant, that made 24-hour news so relevant. It was huge. It dominated the national news cycle in a way that very few things can now, because the media landscape is just different. So we were all plugged into the OJ trial. And for those of us who are Black, it really felt like one of our extended family members or close friends was on trial for something that we honestly did not believe that he did. And even as the evidence was being laid out, just more and more evidence that was piling up against him, blood being found in his vehicle and the gloves being found, even though they didn't fit in the end. The testimony of Cato Kalin, the fact that he had gone on that long Bronco chase with Al Cowlings. There was so much evidence against him that was piling up. But I, among many other people, continued to hope against hope.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Joseph M. Wanted with the Christitutionalist Politics. Tune in for the upcoming episode for May 4. Issue, Never the Issue, as well as guests Peter Serafin, Rosemary Downer, Don Gallade, Gista the rapper, Cy Young, Jason Perry, and upcoming Jack Hagar, Andrew Thorpe King, Trent Rock, Ed Temple, Chris Morehouse, and more. Please tune in to Christitutionalist Politics. God bless.
That this man did not do what he had been accused of doing. There was no way that this beloved figure could be guilty of what he was being accused of. And I'll admit, when that verdict was handed out, I skipped class. I straight up skipped my German phonetics class to hear the verdict on what was going to happen with OJ because it was just that important. I got in a lot of trouble after that. My German teacher knew exactly why I skipped out on that class, and my lies did not go very far at all. But it was worth it to me. A very important cultural moment was happening, and I wanted to be there for it. And I sat there with bated breath, hoping against hope that this man would not be convicted. And when that verdict came down, the Black community, by and large, was extremely relieved that he did not have to go to prison for these murders. If I had to guess, I would say that half of us didn't really believe that he did it. And the other half may have believed that he did it and just wanted him to get off anyway, because there have been so many miscarriages of justice historically within the Black community. So OJ got off, we were all relieved. And then what does he do? He immediately starts to show his true colors. He's calling in to talk shows. He's calling in to BET. He's accusing people like Faye Resnick of having something to do with the murder. He's playing golf. He picked right back up with his girlfriend. He just starts behaving like someone who you know is really glad that he just got away with something. And I immediately started to get the ick. I think a lot of folks did too. I think it took a lot of us a little while to come around to the reality of what had just happened. But I think that was a really eye-opening experience for me and for a lot of people, particularly Black folks, who did on some level root for everybody Black. For those of us who lived through that trial and who saw that man show his true colors as soon as he got off, it was an eye-opener. It was a wake-up call. It was a sign to me that I could not put those blinders on and simply support somebody just because I felt like this dude was family. And unfortunately, we have seen this type of scenario play out many times before our eyes since then. I'm sure other communities deal with this as well. This is not exclusive to the Black community. The other glaring example that comes up, and I'm sure it's on a lot of you all's minds, is Bill Cosby. This was another case of someone who I had very, very deep and warm feelings for. This man was my uncle. He was my father. He was all of our uncles. He was all of our fathers. If you grew up with the Cosby Show, that's how we felt about Bill Cosby. And I remember there was a young woman named Autumn Jackson, I believe, in the late 90s, who had accused him of being her biological father, and she was attempting to extort this money out of him. And at that time, very few people gave this woman any credence whatsoever. She was extorting him, so legally she was in the wrong. So that really was the first inkling for a lot of people that there was any sort of real scandal that was attached to Bill Cosby's name. But still, with the way that that case played out in the court, at least the court of public opinion, and then within the actual court system, he was exonerated. And so I put that in another place in my mind, and we kind of all went on from there. But little did a lot of us know that there had been murmurings within the entertainment community, within the comedy community, for years that Bill Cosby was not only a womanizer, but that he also had a reputation for coercing women sexually, for violating women sexually, all kinds of seedy and unseemly things that we would never, ever, ever want to associate with him. And then this all slowly but surely starts to come to a head when the Me Too movement hits right around 2017. So you have this young Black comedian named Hannibal Buress, who's doing this routine that he's done before, where he's talking about Bill Cosby's problematic ways and the fact that Bill Cosby has been accused on multiple occasions of rape. And these are allegations that have never really received a whole lot of attention from the media. Why? Because it's Bill Cosby. It's everybody's uncle, everybody's dad. But suddenly now, in the light of the Me Too movement, people are starting to take allegations like this much more seriously. And as is the case with the type of crimes that he is accused of committing, once a few victims start to come forward, then there is this slow but sure raindrop effect where more and more people come out and start saying, yeah, I've had that experience too. And I'll tell you, I wanted to ignore this. When this first started to come up right around 2017, my first instinct was to dismiss it, was to dismiss these charges against my uncle daddy, Bill Cosby. People used to call my family the Cosbys. I have a large family. I have six brothers and sisters, and people used to call us the Cosbys all the time. I was right around the age that Vanessa would have been. We grew up listening to Bill Cosby's comedy tapes. This just could not have felt more personal to me. And I know I was not alone. So even in light of the fact that there were multiple women who were starting to make these accusations, my first instinct was to dismiss it. And I'm embarrassed to say that in retrospect, but I did. And it was only when I saw a Washington Post article that came out that showed the exact timeline of all of these accusations that had happened. And they aggregated all of this information and laid this out very clearly and helped the readers to understand what these accusations were all about, exactly what the women were saying. They profiled these women. They showed us who they were. And they explained in very clear detail exactly what they were accusing him of. And they included some of the court transcripts that happened when he went on trial for some of this stuff in 2007 and very clearly showed that he had bought Quaaludes and that he was not necessarily trying to defend himself from these accusations. He was simply saying there was nothing illegal about what I did. And it all started to come down on me slowly but surely that maybe this man who I had lifted up and venerated and idolized for so many years was a deeply, deeply problematic person. And again, I'm learning the lesson all over again. The lesson that I should have learned back in the mid-90s. Is it really my job? Is it really my responsibility to blindly root for everybody Black? And honestly, when I really started to deeply evaluate my feelings about these two figures specifically, O.J. Simpson and Bill Cosby, and I've said again and again, the feeling that I had for them was like a relative, an uncle, a father, a cousin, a brother. There was the feeling of closeness and of family when I thought about how they impacted me. And when I started to think about how I could put on the blinders in this way in relation to people that felt like family, but who had committed these heinous acts, allegedly, and somehow I was failing to see it until it was right there in my face. What it really reminded me of is the attitude that a lot of white folks have about Donald Trump. I think about how easy it is for a lot of us to step back and see him for exactly who he is. And in my estimation, he is nothing less than a vile human being. And that's very obvious to me, but it seems very strange to me that that would not be obvious to most people. But having grown up in the types of environments that I grew up in, surrounded by, frankly, a lot of white folks, a lot of white preachers and pastors, what could almost be considered as cult leaders, it starts to make a whole lot more sense when you think, well, this guy feels like family to some of these people. He feels like a pastor. He feels like an uncle, a brother, a father, a cousin, a grandfather. He fits very neatly into that space for a lot of white folks. And frankly, for a lot of Black people, too, there are plenty of these cult leader pastor types who prey on Black folks. I think about people like Jim Jones, the cult leader who ended up convincing all of these people to take cyanide. I think about people like Peter Popoff, the televangelist, has a huge Black following. People like Robert Tilton, if you watch his infomercials, there are a ton of Black women specifically that show up to his meetings. Some of these guys know exactly how to appeal to the Black community, which really puts Trump's appeal in context for me. But the death of O.J. Simpson really has me asking some bigger questions, both of myself and of the culture at large. To what extent do we place our trust in our Black brothers and sisters? Obviously, under the eyes of the law, you are innocent until proven guilty. But we know the court of public opinion is quite different from that. I think of a case like Jussie Smollett. I have to be honest and say I knew from the outset, and I'm not just saying that in retrospect, I knew from the outset that that story was phonier than a $3 bill. And I think probably being fresh off of the Bill Cosby situation helped me to process that a little bit better. And I also didn't have any real emotional attachment to Jussie Smollett. I didn't watch the shows that he was on. He was just an actor that I was familiar with. But the story that he told about being jumped and being called the N-word at 2 o'clock in the morning in downtown Chicago, it all just rang false, in my opinion. And I shared it privately with a few close friends and family. I didn't say anything on my socials, didn't disparage the guy. but I didn't believe him. And I know that there are people to this day that still believe his story and believe that he was done wrong. And I think there is that tendency on our part as Black people, because we know the history of the miscarriages of justice. There is that tendency to immediately want to believe Black people. I'm remembering the young woman in, is it Alabama, who said that she had been kidnapped, that she had been taken off the side of the road. And then a few days later, she shows up and it turns out that the whole story was false. There was a whole lot of debate online within the Black community about believing Black women, believing Black people. And then it turns out that this young woman was not telling the truth for whatever reason. So I think as we become more media savvy, as a lot of us get older, we just become more aware to be on the lookout for our emotions being toyed with. Oftentimes when Black folks who frankly have not really been down with the Black community, when Black folks who have been protected and shielded by their money from having to be treated the way a typical Black person is treated in society, when these people finally get in trouble with the law, then suddenly they're pulling on the Black community and saying, hey, I'm your brother, I'm your sister, remember me? Suddenly OJ is the Blackest of the Black, when he really didn't want to have a whole lot to do with the Black community before he got into trouble. Suddenly Bill Cosby, who is accused of assaulting dozens and dozens of white women, says, hey, they're just trying to keep a Black man down. When truthfully, he had been at odds with a certain segment of the Black community for several years because he had been talking down on a particular type of Black person. He had been preaching what is commonly referred to as respectability politics and pissing a lot of Black folks off, frankly. But suddenly, we were supposed to forget all of this because he was under attack because he was a Black man with power. Suddenly, Candace Owens is saying, yeah, Black people, they have convinced you that I'm against you, and I'm not really against you. I don't know how they deceive the Black community into thinking that I had a problem with them. Now that she's lost her job at the Daily Wire, suddenly she wants to go on The Breakfast Club and chop it up with Charlamagne. She wants to go on Joe Budden's podcast, and she wants to be Black again. Just watching these types of cases play out in the public square has taught me over a very long period of time that there are people within the Black community who will try to use their status as a Black person to manipulate Black people, to get Black folks on their side for all manner of foolishness, to convince us that they're just like we are, when half of them haven't wanted to have anything to do with us for a very long time. And it just goes to show that money is a very powerful tool for separating a person from their so-called Blackness. Money can insulate you from a lot. We all know that Kanye is all over the place right now, doing podcasts with Nick Fuentes, talking about how much he admires Hitler, wearing White Lives Matter t-shirts, going down to Florida to meet with Trump, making comments about slavery being a choice. But there are still Black folks that will stand 10 toes down with Kanye. Why? Because he's Black and because they admire his work. They have history with him. He feels like a brother, a cousin, a nephew, an uncle. He feels like family. So there are certain ones of us who will never, ever, ever abandon Kanye because of his talent and because he's Black, frankly. But this is something I think that we all have to be on the lookout for, because we all have our blind spots. It's very possible that one or more of the people that I have mentioned are a soft spot for you. It makes you uncomfortable. It makes you cringe, the idea that someone could be accusing this person of wrongdoing when you, in your heart, don't believe they did anything wrong, regardless of all the evidence that exists that says otherwise. Allegedly. But we have to understand that we enter into these conversations carrying something called confirmation bias. And confirmation bias can be so powerful. Confirmation bias causes you to come into a situation saying, I already know what the outcome should be. Regardless of what the facts are, I am going to look for facts that support what I already want to believe. It is so easy to see confirmation bias in other people. I can see it in a Trump supporter so easily, but it was not easy to see that in myself when I was viewing the OJ trial with my fingers crossed, hoping that he would get off, regardless of the information that was presented that showed that this man was clearly guilty, allegedly, of what he had been accused of doing. I couldn't see the confirmation bias in myself when I refused to open my eyes to what was going on with Bill Cosby. Confirmation bias is so powerful that it not only will it cause you to come into a situation assuming that you know what the end should be, but it will cause you to forget the facts that don't support the conclusion that you have already drawn. You are not holding on to information that doesn't support your thesis. You're not holding on to that information as well as you are holding on to information that does support your thesis. And this applies across the board to so many things. But I think when it comes to matters of race specifically, we really have to be on the lookout for this. Primarily because race is so often used as a way to engender support from the Black community. Support that's not always been earned. We can love and support those that we love and support, whether they be friends, family, or celebrities that we feel like we know. We can support them and root for them a bit privately, but it don't mean you got to put up that status talking about the situation like you know what's going on, because maybe you don't. I remember when that whole Bill Cosby thing blew up online, and there were people that I really loved and respected who were going so hard for Bill Cosby. And after I finally read that Washington Post article that really opened up my eyes, and I remember making a status on my Facebook that said, "You all are supporting Cliff Huxtable. You are supporting someone that you think you know, but the person that you do not know is Bill Cosby. You don't actually know this man. You know the public version of him that he has presented to us all our lives, but you don't know the private man. And no one is saying that you need to take up arms before something has been proven and participate in tearing anybody down. But I think it would behoove a lot of us just to take a pause, to take a beat, to step back and say, you know what? I'm going to hold off on making any judgments right now. I'm not going to say anything. Let me keep my mouth off of this situation until I fully understand what is going on." Because we've seen it play out time and time again in our lifetimes. We want to immediately come to the defense of people that we feel are being wrongly accused. But as is so often the case, and I could run down the names right now, as is so often the case, once we start to hear about the atrocities or the alleged atrocities that are happening on the watch of people like R. Kelly and P. Diddy and Russell Simmons and so many more, then we've got to make the decision. If we've loudly defended them, then we have to make the decision. Am I going to back off or am I going to double down? And all too often, folks just get real quiet after the fact because that's all they can do. We're sounding off like we have inside information that we do not have. Because we care about our people. We have seen so many Black men in particular be convicted, be carted off to jail for things that they did not do. We've seen injustice after injustice, and we just want to make it right. But everybody don't deserve your support simply because they are Black. And it really does not cost anything for us to keep our mouth shut until we fully understand the details of the situation. And if we truly have pushed past that point where we're looking to have our biases confirmed and we are avoiding information that supports any other conclusion than the one we want to come to, if we really have done our investigations and we feel that somebody has truly been done wrong, then absolutely, we need to come to the support of our Black brothers and sisters. But everybody don't deserve our support. And I think we do a disservice to those who do deserve our support by blindly throwing our support behind anybody that's Black. Those days are over, for me at least. I have been burned one too many times. I have learned how to step back, how to keep my mouth shut, how to take in the facts, and be a little more judicious and scrutinizing about who I choose to support publicly. Now, I know there are those of you who may disagree with what I have to say. Let's meet on the KJLH Instagram page and let's talk it out. Radio Free KJLH on Instagram. I'm Dara Starr Tucker, and this has been The Breakdown. Thank you all so much for listening. Looking forward to seeing you all at the Women's Conference on May 11th. Go to kjlhradio.com to register for the Women's Conference. It's absolutely free. You can find me online at Dara Tucker B on Instagram or at Dara Star Tucker, Dara with one R and Star with two on all the other social media platforms. I'm looking forward to doing this with you again next week, same time, same place. You all take care of each other. Keep rooting for each other. And until then, let's learn to shout.